And a good Wednesday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget you can take the show with you 24/7 via your favorite podcast app. Just search for the Nick Craig Show. Tap the subscribe or follow button and get a brand new program delivered each and every weekday morning. I want to thank the Law Group here in Wilmington this morning for their continued support of the show. You can visit them online at lawgroupnc.com or give them a call at 910-251-6088. More details on them coming up a little bit later on in the program this morning. We start off with a pretty interesting national story. I'll be the first to admit it's not a surprising story at all. Yesterday, NPR and a couple of their member stations have announced that they are officially suing President Trump and the Trump administration over his executive order that he signed earlier this month that seeks to cut federal funding from NPR and PBS. And there's really no surprise here, is there? I mean, can you tell yourself this morning that you're shocked that NPR is suing the Trump administration? I mean, this is the Democrat playbook, right? You lose an election because your candidate sucks. You lose an election because you fail to project to the American people that you have policies, ideas, and platforms that are best for America moving forward. You are unsuccessful in convincing the people of America to vote for you and to support your candidates and support your ideas. So you lose. And then when things start changing, which they obviously have dramatically over the last 130 plus days, then you begin the process of sue till blue. You begin the process of taking everything that this administration is attempting to do, wage it out in the court system in an attempt to not even win the cases, but in many cases, just slow down the process. So it was filed in the U.S. District Court in Washington, D.C. The suit was brought by NPR and three Colorado-based public radio stations. The suit argues that President Trump's executive order violates the First Amendment and provisions of the Public Broadcasting Act, which Congress passed first back in 1967. The plaintiffs also assert that President Trump did not have the authority to stop federal funding to NPR and PBS, and his order should be invalidated as unconstitutional. So let's dissect a couple of the different pieces here. We'll start with violating the First Amendment. I don't know how you could argue that this violates the First Amendment. NPR and PBS, under the executive order, which we talked about in great detail on this show, does not stop NPR and PBS from existing as media entities. The executive order does not force NPR or PBS to close their doors, shut off their radio transmitters, shut off their broadcast television transmitters. It does none of that. It does not force them to cease their existence as news entities and news outlets. Of course, we'll put those in air quotes. It simply states that the federal government is no longer going to be in the business of subsidizing that kind of content. That there is really not a place anymore. You look back at the 1967 when PBS first started and NPR shortly after that, National Public Radio, the Public Broadcasting Corporation, and what their goal and what their objective was through the 1960s, 70s, and 80s. Things have dramatically changed since then. The media landscape has dramatically changed since then. I made this point back a couple of weeks ago, and I'll make it again. As somebody who worked in conservative media locally up until July of last year when my departure took place here in Wilmington, we didn't get free money from the federal government. We had to produce a high-quality product to go out and get advertisers to sustain our broadcast entity. That was the avenue in which we operated. That's the avenue in which thousands of conservative talk radio stations across the United States have to operate. Many of you are follow me on my morning show that I do over on WBT. Same situation there. We have to put forward high quality content to sell to advertisers to pay employees, to pay rent, to pay all of the bills associated with operating a radio station, which are very expensive. We don't get any handout from the federal government. They never have, they never will, and I would argue they shouldn't. I don't think that the federal government should be in the business of funding something like conservative talk radio or liberal talk radio. There's no way that you can justify to me that that is a good use of money. I don't think they should fund conservative talk. I don't think they should fund liberal talk. I don't think that the federal government, you know, there's nothing in our United States Constitution that lays out that, oh yeah, this is a great use of money to fund public media. It just doesn't make any sense. So taking the First Amendment piece of this, it seems absurd. If PBS and NPR want to continue to operate, which I think they should, and I hope they do, if they want to continue operating as entities, then they need to go out and get their corporate underwriters, which is what their equivalent to advertising is, and go out and get money from donors. Go out and get money from your listeners. That is a very viable revenue stream as of right now. And for the most part, it's been a very viable revenue stream for NPR and PBS for decades. The vast majority of their money comes from donors and corporate underwriters, aka sponsorships. So I don't know how this is an attack on the First Amendment right of NPR and PBS. I didn't see Trump going to Brendan Carr, the head of the chair, rather, of the Federal Communications Commission and say, hey, Brandon, start revoking the licenses for NPR and PBS. If that had happened, I would be singing a very different tune. But that didn't happen. The executive order does not tell the FCC to revoke NPR's licenses across the country. It does not tell the FCC to revoke PBS's broadcasting licenses across the country. They're free to continue to do whatever the hell they want. They're just not going to be able to do it while receiving tens of millions of dollars from the federal government every year. So this argument over First Amendment is complete and total nonsense. It's absurd that that argument is even made. Getting to some of our comments this morning on our live Rumble chat, Aqua Blue commenting, how about other radio stations sue the federal government for the same funding that PBR and NPR get? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the absurdity of it, is everybody else has to compete in this very competitive ecosystem, which is media. It's gotten way more competitive over the last decade, 15 years or so, with the internet, with the ability to listen and stream podcasts pretty much globally, worldwide, whether you're watching them on YouTube, listening on a podcast app all over the internet. It's a very competitive ecosystem. I get it. I'm in that ecosystem now. I've been in that ecosystem for the majority of my adult life. And it's very competitive. And the idea that one entity is getting a handout, the idea that NPR and PBS have a leg up on everybody else because they fall under the guise of, oh, well, we're public media. Meanwhile, all they're interested in is funding and continuing to promote left-wing propaganda is absurd. And I made this point when we discussed this executive order back at the beginning of the month. Nobody forced NPR and PBS to operate in this manner. Nobody held a gun to their head and said, you've got to start swaying your news coverage to Democrats and covering for them, carrying water for them, and essentially operating as a fanboy for the Democrat Party and their policies. Nobody forced them to do that. They sat down in board meetings. They sat down in various conference rooms discussing what kind of content they were going to promote, what kind of news they were going to cover. And that's what they decided to do. I didn't decide it. You didn't decide it. They decided it. And with that, now they are having to deal with the consequences of getting away from what I would argue was the initial premise of something like PBS and NPR to be a true public broadcasting entity and just become another another drop in the puddle as it relates to left-wing media coverage, right? Because the vast majority of media is left-wing. It's all over the place. But they decided to do that. They decided that that is how they wanted to cover the quote-unquote news. So my sympathy is non-existent. There are no tears building up in my eyes over NPR and PBS losing this money. I don't care. The same way that conservative talk stations and conservative media have decided that they're going to plant their flag in the ground. This is what we stand for. This is what we're going to promote. That's great. If you can sustain it with advertisers, if you can sustain it, crowdfunding with, you know, services like Patreon and other things like that, good on you. I don't care. But don't take my money and pay for it. Let me, as the consumer, decide what I want to fund. So that's the first part, the violation of the First Amendment. The second, provisions of the Public Broadcasting Act, we'll get into that a little bit later on. And of course, the last part of it, Trump doesn't have the authority to do that via executive order, which we're watching play out in a vast majority of his executive order legal challenges that have been brought forward by the left. The order, NPR and three other stations said in the complaint, is textbook retaliation and discriminates based on viewpoint, which is a violation of the First Amendment. The lawsuit states, quote, "The order's objectives could not be more clear. The order aims to punish NPR for the content of news and other programming that the president dislikes and chill the free exercise of First Amendment rights by NPR and individual public radio stations across the country." Now, they're right about that. This order could not be more clear. It absolutely aims to punish NPR for their content. They have gotten away from their mission. They are no longer a public broadcasting entity that is interested in the facts. They are no longer a public broadcasting entity that is interested in providing information to their audience and allowing them to make up their minds. NPR is now in the business of left-wing propaganda and left-wing indoctrination. And for that, they should, in fact, have their money. Not from their corporate sponsors, not from their donors, but from the federal government. So in this case, I think the lawsuit is right, but the First Amendment does not require that the federal government fund NPR and PBS. There is nothing in the First Amendment under the Freedom of Speech Clause that states anything about funding public media. And again, nothing in the executive order stops them from doing that. They just don't get their big bucks from the feds anymore. So sad, too bad. In response to the lawsuit, Harrison Fields, a White House spokesperson, claimed in a statement to CBS News for the Corporation of Public Broadcasters, noted that it is creating media to support a particular political party on the taxpayers' dime. Therefore, the president is exercising his lawful authority to limit funding to NPR and PBS. The president was elected with a mandate to ensure efficient use of taxpayer dollars, and he will continue to use his lawful authority to achieve that objective. Now, this is reading from the CBS News article, which I think is pretty rich. So listen to this. President Trump and his Republican allies have long complained about NPR and accused it of being biased against conservatives. Project 2025, the sweeping policy roadmap overseen by the Heritage Foundation, calls for defunding both NPR and PBS. CBS News is just one and the same with NPR and PBS. Republicans and conservatives have been talking about defunding NPR for 40 years. But now, you know, it was in Project 2025, which Democrats tried to link to Trump during the election, another failed attempt by Democrats leading up to the November election. Sorry, guys, didn't work then. It's probably not going to work now. Continuing, the president's executive order directs that the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, CPB, which provides public dollars to NPR and PBS, as well as other federal agencies, cease federal funding and indirect funding for the two outlets. The directive said that taxpayers, quote, have the right to expect that if their tax dollars fund public broadcasting at all, they fund only fair, accurate, unbiased, and nonpartisan news coverage. The White House has claimed that the two outlets receive millions from taxpayers to spread radical, woke propaganda disguised as news. And from my vantage point, that is a pretty solid estimation of what's going on. Now, here's the problem. In the media ecosystem that we're in Now, it is very hard for anybody to provide just the facts because we love sensational media. I mean, we absolutely love it. We go on social media. That's what we look for. It is very hard to fund fair, accurate, unbiased, and nonpartisan news coverage. It is. It's very hard to find. I will be the first to admit. So inherently, that is a very hard thing to do. But NPR and PBS are not even close to trying to do that. I mean, the Yuri Berliner story from last year, 2 years ago, I don't even know how long. Yeah, I think it was last year. Back, it was probably about a year ago, I guess, when he announced after, you know, 25 years of working at NPR that he was stepping aside. And he gave the variety of reasons as to why he was doing so. He talked about the frustration that he had looking at the stories that were missed by NPR. Things like the Hunter Biden laptop story, which they just completely ignored because, well, didn't fit their left-wing narrative. Discussing the origins of COVID-19, which shut down the entire world, destroyed small businesses across America. PBS, or in this case NPR, had no interest in covering serious questions about the origin, and it went on and on and on. They all decided to do that. They all decided that was how they were going to operate in the media landscape. Now, this is very interesting from the CBS News article. It reads as this. NPR is primarily funded through sponsorships, donations, memberships, and licensing fees from local radio stations, and direct funding from the Corporation for Public Broadcasters and other federal grants is only roughly 1% of its budget. Well, if it's only 1% of its budget, then why the hell are they suing the federal government? Well, if it's 1%, which it's not, but if it's 1%, why would you go through this process? You seemingly will spend more on legal fees fighting this out in federal court than just losing the money. This is very disingenuous framing from CBS. For the 2024 fiscal year, NPR received roughly $11 million in grants from the Corporation for Programming and to Support Public Radio Satellite Systems, which is the country's public radio interconnection system. But the president's executive order targeting NPR and PBS was just one step it has taken to target public media. Last month, the president attempted to fire three officials with the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which was created by Congress in 1967 as a private nonprofit entity to ensure investment in public broadcasting. The corporation says it distributes more than 70% of its funding to more than 1,500 locally owned radio and television stations. The ousted members of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting's board of directors sued the Trump administration over their removal, arguing that the president didn't have power to fire them. In their lawsuit, NPR, Aspen Public Radio, Colorado Public Radio, and KSUT Public Radio said that President Trump's executive order violates the express will of Congress and their First Amendment rights. The news outlet warned that the president's directive threatens the existence of public radio systems that that millions of Americans across the country rely on for vital news and information. NPR and PBS are not providing vital news and information. And the argument that you'll see probably, and I'm going to give you a little inside baseball on this. I know I did this a few weeks ago, but I'll do it again. You'll hear, oh, well, NPR and PBS are vital for emergency alerts. And without NPR and PBS, there is just no way that people across the country will get access to tornado warnings and flash flood warnings and natural disasters. Bullshit. Complete and total bullshit. Every single licensed radio and television entity in the United States operates under what is known as the EAS system, the Emergency Alert System. Every state has a group that is responsible for coordinating said emergency alert system. You've likely been in your car or been watching TV for any period of time when there's a severe thunderstorm warning or tornado warning or something of that nature. And the program that you're watching or listening to on the radio is interrupted by those three loud beeps. And then a voice comes on and tells you what's going on. That is the emergency alert system. And the backbone of the emergency alert system is not NPR and it is not PBS. It is the tens of thousands of radio stations and TV stations across the United States. It is absolutely not a vital mean for in terms of NPR and PBS as to what they're providing. Every single radio and television station operates under the EAS system. If they don't, they are required to shut their transmitters off during an emergency alert. That's the rules as it's stated in the EAS handbook, which, yes, I have read. So this idea that they're providing critical public safety information, as I noted, is complete bullshit. There's just no other way around it. It's not accurate. Now, they can claim and argue vital news and information. That's fine. That's their opinion to have. But with tens of thousands of radio and television stations operating under the EAS system, which they've done national tests on over the last couple of years, with every single person carrying around a smartphone, which gets wireless emergency alerts, WEAs, when your phone is in a location in which there's a tornado warning or a flash flood warning, some other sort of natural disaster event, there's just no way that you can justify NPR and PBS's existence solely based on that. According to the head of NPR, she wrote in a statement, quote, "The executive order is a clear violation of the Constitution and the First Amendment protections for our freedom of speech and association, as well as freedom of the press. It is an affront to the rights of NPR and NPR's 246 member stations, which are locally owned, nonprofit, non-commercial media organizations serving all 50 states and territories. Today, we challenge its constitutionality in the nation's independent courts." Great. I hope you do challenge it. I would very much like to watch this play out publicly, because I don't believe that NPR and PBS have any grounds to stand on. Now, they're going to try and claim that they are, Trump doesn't have the authority to do that. But then you're talking about a procedural issue, which is still an issue, sure, but then you're talking about a procedural issue. The real question at hand is, does the federal government have an obligation to provide public media? And whether you like NPR or despise NPR, nowhere in the United States Constitution, nowhere in any of our founding documents will you find anything in there that American taxpayers are obligated to finance what has now become Democrat propaganda. You will not find that listed out anywhere, because it's just not the case. It just doesn't exist. So I'm sorry to NPR and PBS for feeling that way, but it doesn't say that. You guys had your ability to act as, in fact, public media. You had the ability to promote content, to bring various voices on board, to provide a fair, balanced viewpoint of the issues of the day, and you chose not to. You fumbled the opportunity because it didn't fit your ideological agenda. You had the ability to allow tough, contentious conversations to take place on your airwaves, but you chose that you would rather get in bed with the Democrat Party, toe the Democrat line, carry water for Democrat candidates and policies, and as a result, now you're being discriminated against and retaliated against, as you should be, because you're no longer funding, or you're no longer promoting the kind of media that you say that you are. Imagine being in that position. Imagine having the ability to say to your audience, your viewers, your listeners, that we are the beacon of information. We are the beacon of truth. We are not going to sway political stories for one agenda or another. We are going to take issues down the middle. We're going to provide you both perspectives on it. Imagine having that ability. That's what NPR and PBS had. They decided that it was more important to get in bed with Democrats than to do that. And I brought this point up before too. You know, I enjoy watching C-SPAN. I know that's probably not a normal thing for people to do. You know, C-SPAN, which actually provides information, right? When Congress is in session, you can turn on C-SPAN and watch 9 hours of uninterrupted views of the House and the Senate in Washington, D.C. They've got, you know, they've actually got really good programs like the Washington Journal and other shows where they do, in fact, bring on a conservative and a liberal to debate an issue. It's great content. You know who doesn't receive any federal money? C-SPAN. C-SPAN is operated by cable and satellite providers that pay into C-SPAN for them to provide that content. NPR and PBS had the ability to do that. They chose not to. They chose that it was more important to push a left-wing agenda, push a left-wing narrative. I just don't really care. They have decided over decades now that they wanted to be politically biased instead of politically neutral. And so their funding is going to be cut. Don't really care. Don't really care. And so I look forward to this legal challenge playing out. I'm sure, you know, looking at where this was originally filed, the U.S. District Court in Washington, D.C., I'm sure that they are going to get this in front of a friendly liberal Democrat judge who will go, oh, my God, we've got to issue a temporary injunction, a temporary stay on this, because that's how this whole process has unfolded with pretty much every single Trump executive order. They'll get it in front of a liberal judge who will put a temporary block on it. The Trump administration will go back and we'll actually watch this process go through the legal system as it should if NPR and PBS believe that that's the way that this should go down. In this case, it's just NPR in the lawsuit. PBS has not sued. It is just NPR and three stations in Colorado that are suing the Trump administration. No surprise there at all. We'll keep a very close eye on this lawsuit between NPR and PBS. I want to remind you this morning about one of our great advertisers here on the Nick Craig Show and encourage you to check out The Law Group. When legal challenges arise, make sure you put your trust in The Law Group right here in Wilmington. For over 20 years now, their experienced attorneys have provided high-quality, affordable legal services across Eastern North Carolina. Whether you're in a position where you're facing a divorce, navigating what could be a tricky real estate transaction, or maybe you need a strong defense, The Law Group has your back. Their dedicated team ensures that your questions are answered and issues are resolved promptly. Located in downtown Wilmington, they're just a phone call away at 910-251-6088, or you can visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. That's 910-251-6088, or their website, lawgroupnc.com. The Law Group, experience and dedication you can rely on. They've got a great website over there at lawgroupnc.com, all of their various practice areas. You can read about their attorneys and their experiences, plus a lot of great reviews. And one real neat thing on the Law Group website, their blog, where they discuss a variety of legal issues that you may be in and could potentially be in the future. All of that available over at lawgroupnc.com. Give them a call, 910-251-6088. And we appreciate their continued support of the Nick Craig Show. Speaking of federal news this morning, a pretty major announcement made by the United States Justice Department yesterday as it relates to voter integrity across the state of North Carolina. We'll have those details coming up here in just a few minutes as the Nick Craig Show rolls on live on a Wednesday morning, YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts. And a good Wednesday morning to you. Welcome back to the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget that you can support the show via Patreon, get access to exclusive content, daily show notes, and more. That is available over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. Coming up tomorrow night, our monthly hangout. That's taking place at 7 o'clock tomorrow night for those that are subscribers over at Patreon. We've got some new folks on board since last month, so looking forward to chatting with everybody tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. You still have time to sign up if you are interested in doing so and supporting the show. You can head on over to patreon.com/Nick Craig, and you'll get access to that Zoom call again tomorrow night. appreciate everybody's support and continued support of the program. A major announcement yesterday from the United States Justice Department has been filed, and it puts the North Carolina State Board of Elections under the crosshairs this morning. Reading the latest over at CarolinaJournal.com, the lawsuit filed yesterday against the state and the state board accuses the election board of failing to maintain an accurate voter list in violation of the federal Help America Vote Act, also known as HAVA. Now, for individuals that have been following the election integrity discussion for any significant period of time here in North Carolina, knows about HAVA. That is a federal law that was enacted back 20 years ago. It was the early 2000s under the George Bush administration when HAVA was first introduced. And part of HAVA, the Help Americans Vote Act, was a federal law requiring states to require one of two things when somebody registers to vote: either a driver's license number or the last four digits of a social security number. Not both, but one or the other in the process of helping to maintain an accurate voter roll. Now, here in the state of North Carolina, under Democrat control, surprise, surprise, in the State Board of Elections, that has not been filed. That has not been followed appropriately out of the North Carolina State Board of Elections. And as a result of that, now you've got the federal government, the United States Department of Justice, stepping in and saying, you guys are not following the law. You guys are creating a problem here in violation of federal law. So let's go through the details. The suit specifically references the Elections Board's use of a voter registration form that did not require prospective voters to provide either A, the driver's license number, or B, the last four digits of a social security number. The same issue prompted a 2024 lawsuit from state and national Republican Party groups that factored into a six-month legal and also factored into the six-month legal dispute over the state Supreme Court election that was just resolved a couple of weeks ago. So we did get a press release on this. The Assistant Attorney General Harmeet Dhillon, who, of course, for election integrity folks, you're very familiar with her, said this: accurate voter registration rolls are critical to ensure that elections in North Carolina are conducted fairly, accurately, and without fraud. The Department of Justice will not hesitate to file suit against jurisdictions that maintain inaccurate voter registration rolls in violation of federal voting laws. This is not very complicated. This story in itself is not very complicated. HAVA has existed for 20 years. The idea that North Carolina, under the guise of the North Carolina State Board of Elections, was not following this and was allowing people to register to vote without requiring the driver's license number or the social security number is absurd. It's completely absurd. And for all of the bitching and complaining that Democrats did over the last 6 months against Jefferson Griffin and Republicans, once again, you guys created this problem. Had you have followed HAVA, had you not allowed more than 250,000 people in the state of North Carolina to register without a driver's license number or social security number, he would not have had the ability to really challenge the votes and what you saw over the last 6 months. It just wouldn't have happened. You guys opened the door for the criticism. You guys opened the door for the lawsuit because you chose not to follow federal law. I mean, it's very, very simple. This is not a very complicated issue or thing that we're talking about. If you had followed HAVA, Jefferson Griffin would not have been able to challenge some 60 plus thousand ballots. But you allowed him to because you didn't feel it was important to follow federal law as it relates to HAVA. State Board of Elections Executive Director Sam Hayes, who is newly on the job, he's only been in the position about 2 weeks now, said, quote, "I was only recently notified of this action by the United States Department of Justice. We are still reviewing the complaint, but the failure to collect the information required by HAVA has been well documented. He goes on to say, rest assured that I am committed to bringing North Carolina into compliance with federal law. And boy, isn't that refreshing to hear. Under the previous executive director, Karen Brinson Bell, I don't think that would have been her response. Under the previous Democrat-controlled state board of elections, I don't think that would have been their response. But now that you've got Republicans controlling the state board, three Republicans, two Democrats, and a brand new board of elections director, it seems like this problem is actually probably going to solve itself pretty quickly. And this lawsuit hopefully won't exist very long because the state board knows that there's a problem. As the executive director, Sam Hayes, says, it's been well documented. There's no argument that it exists. So now the state board has to go through the process of figuring this thing out. And this is going to be very relevant and very important for midterm elections coming up next year. Now, obviously, we have municipal elections coming up in November of this year. You know, as we look at the calendar this morning, we're almost into the month of June, so I'm not sure exactly how much can or will be done leading up to the early voting period for the November elections this year. But looking at this long term, this can have and should have major impacts in elections going forward. The suit referenced President Donald Trump's March the 25th executive order on preserving and protecting the integrity of American elections. That executive order aimed to ensure that elections are being held in compliance with federal laws to guard against illegal voting, unlawful discriminations, and other forms of fraud, errors, or suspicion. The complaint says, quote, the cornerstone of public trust in the government lies in free and fair elections. The core of the compact between a state and its citizens rests in ensuring that only eligible citizens can vote in elections. Who argues with that? I guess Democrats? People that believe that voter ID is racist? People that are of the mindset that when you ask somebody to verify who they are before they vote, that you're discriminating against them? I guess so. This idea, and really it's a sad situation overall, that people across party lines, I'll note, when you look at the polling, have serious questions and concerns about voting. That's a problem. When you've got a populace, whether it's, you know, in a specific state or a specific area in a state, that are questioning and are asking questions about the sanctity, the security of an election, I see that as a big problem. You know, there's nothing wrong, and I'll be the first to admit I'm incredibly skeptical of government almost all of the time. You know, you get burnt a couple of times by the government, and you start looking at things in a little different light. But you should not have serious questions and concerns as it relates to boards of elections. You should not have serious questions and concerns as it relates to the state board of elections and whether or not they are following federal law. I mean, that just seems insane to me. Yet that's the position that we're in right now because of actions taken by previous administrations, but because of actions taken by previous board of elections, we are sitting here right now talking about the Department of Justice and Harmeet Dhillon suing the state of North Carolina and suing the state board of elections. Again, this was a choice. This didn't have to happen. Harmeet Dhillon did not have to go after the state of North Carolina. She didn't have to sue the state board of elections. But they chose over the past couple of decades, they chose that they were going to, in some part, ignore HAVA. They were going to ignore these federal requirements, which verifies somebody's information. And so that's where we stand this morning. The lawsuit continues by saying, quote, defendants, that would be the state board, have failed to maintain accurate lists in North Carolina's computerized statewide voter registration system in violation of Section 303A5 of the Help America's Vote Act. and the sacred trust that the people of the state of North Carolina have put into them to ensure the fairness and integrity of elections for federal offices in the state, which are necessary and necessitating this litigation. The suit names the state, the election board, all five individual members, including the executive director and Sam Hayes, who officially took office back on May the 15th. With a new Republican members being both Francis DeLuca and Robert Rucho, the board recently flipped from a 3-2 Democrat majority to a 3-2 Republican majority. State Auditor Dave Bolick, also a Republican, made the appointments under authority granted to him in the 2024 Senate Bill 382. So you've got a couple of different moving parts here. I'll just take a step back here for a second and kind of explain how we got to this position. In the General Assembly last year, 2024, Republicans there changed the law as to who has authority and oversight over the State Board of Elections. They passed legislation, Senate Bill 382, that changed it from the governor to the state auditor. Now, they claimed, that being the Republicans in the General Assembly, claimed that they had the authority to do that as spelled out in the North Carolina State Constitution. Any clear reading of the state constitution proves that that's the fact. You are taking an executive branch ability that the governor had and not taking it out of the executive branch, but shifting it to somebody else in the executive branch, right? We have 10 executive branch members across the state of North Carolina. That's what makes up the Council of State. You've probably heard that before. And it's people like the auditor, the labor commissioner, the agriculture commissioner, the insurance commissioner. There's 10 people that make up the Council of State. All of those individuals have authority under the executive branch, right? These people run statewide elections, they run statewide primaries, and then they are either successful or unsuccessful in winning their election. And in the case of State Auditor Dave Bolick, he was successful in winning his election in November of last year and is now a duly sworn member of the North Carolina executive branch. So the General Assembly said, well, we've got the authority to change who makes the appointments and who has the oversight. And when you look at this situation that we're talking about this morning, it makes sense why the authority was shifted, does it not? You had a State Board of Elections that was absolutely ignoring federal law as it relates to voter registrations. You had a State Board of Elections that was not following HAVA, was allowing people to register to vote in the state of North Carolina without collecting a driver's license or the last four digits of a Social Security number. I would argue when you've got an entity that is blatantly ignoring the law like that, that is blatantly saying F you to the federal government as it relates to following voter registration laws, that a change needs to take place. Again, actions have consequences. Had the State Board of Elections not put themselves in this position, had the State Board of Elections over the last couple of years not constantly found themselves in controversies as it relates to things like HAVA, as it relates to things like the voter registration rolls, this probably wouldn't have happened. But because Democrats once again just took it a little bit too far as it relates to their authority with the State Board of Elections, they had to be slapped back down to reality. And the reality is, now it's a Republican that has control over the state board. The reality now is that Republicans will have and will continue to have control over the state board as long as a Republican continues in the state auditor's office. So you had that law passed by the GA, Governor Roy Cooper at the time, and Attorney General at the time, Josh Stein, both Democrats, sued the General Assembly to try and block this from happening, essentially claiming that the governor is the only one that could have authority over the State Board of Elections, nullifying what is the rest of the Council of State, which is incredibly offensive to those members who, as I noted, ran statewide elections, raised tens of millions of dollars going across the state, shaking hands, talking to people, laying out policies and platforms as it relates to what they want to do for the state of North Carolina in their position. It's a complete and total slap in the face to them. The courts did not rule in the favor of Josh Stein. a Wake County judge did, but the appeals court overruled it. And just on Friday, just a couple of days ago, the state Supreme Court ruled that no, in fact, the appeals court got it right. And as it stands right now, Republican State Auditor Dave Bolick does in fact have control over the election board. I know there's a lot of moving pieces and parts there, so trying to keep it relatively brief, but that's essentially the process that got us to this point. And I'm thrilled. I love the fact that we've got that now that we've got Republicans that are going to be making these decisions. I love the fact that we now have Republicans on the State Board of Elections that will, how do I say this nicely? Follow the law? I know that's a very complicated thing for the left, but just follow the freaking law. Have is not very complicated. Have is not something new. It didn't just pop up yesterday. It's been enshrined in federal law for 20 years. And it makes it explicitly clear what an election board is required to do as it relates to voter registration. It's not ambiguous. There's no blurry lines. There's no way to read in between the lines or read the tea leaves on it. It's explicitly clear as to what is required. Democrats in the State Board of Elections, Democrats in all 100 county local boards decided, meh, we'll sometimes follow it. The problem is they had a voter registration form out for years in the state that did not have those two fields listed as required. That's the issue, right? You've all seen forms, whether you're filling them out online or filling them out in person, they'll have a little red asterisk or something next to it indicating that it's a required field. The State Board of Elections had voter forms that did not have those fields required. That's why so many people are registered in North Carolina without a driver's license and without a social security number and or a social security number. That's the problem. They brought a form out and did not require that data. They knew the data was required. They knew they needed to collect it. They chose that it wasn't important enough for them to do. They chose that for whatever freaking reason, unbeknownst to me, unbeknownst to you, that they just didn't need to do that. So you had the GOP and the RNC sue them in August of last year. I don't know why they waited until August to do it. It was way too close to the election for anything substantial to happen, but they did. You had Jefferson Griffin, who just waged a six-month legal battle against the State Board of Elections and against Democrat Allison Riggs over these exact same complaints. And with all of that, now you've got the United States Department of Justice stepping in as well and saying, hey, guys, hey, we're here, too, because you are in violation of federal law. So with all of that being said, the new lawsuit has been assigned to U.S. District Judge Louise Wood Flanagan, ironically and funny enough, who was appointed to the branch in 2003 by President George W. Bush around the exact same time that HAVA became federal law. You would assume, and I know that, you know, I know what they say about assumptions, but you would assume Democrats at a certain point would wrap their head around the idea that if they're going to fly in the face of the law, that when the power changes, which of course it does every 4 or 8 years for the most part, that there's going to be serious consequences for them. I don't know if it's that they're just too short-sighted. I don't know if they're just interested in getting the immediate political wins that they believe that they need. I don't really know what the issue is. But there's never been a question that the State Board of Elections was in violation of HAVA. I mean, there's no room to even argue it. Even the new executive director says it's well documented. And so I really do kind of scratch my head and wonder why this is the case. Like, this was such an easy problem for the State Board of Elections to fix. Say, crap, we screwed up. Let's go through and fix the process. Would have been a relatively easy thing for them to do. But for whatever reason, they just weren't interested in doing it. And then they're the same. Then that's the same group of people that are constantly up in arms when individuals start questioning things around elections. They'll then call you a conspiracy theorist if you have the audacity to question what went on in an election. That you had the audacity to question election integrity. Now, you guys crack the door open for this stuff constantly. You guys are always causing some level of doubt in people's mind. I don't believe that you have any position to get off and say, oh, well, you shouldn't be questioning these elections. They're safe and secure. There's no problems here at all. It's the most absurd thing in the world. And so once again, because of Democrat actions, not too dissimilar from the whole NPR and PBS discussion we were having earlier, they decided to go left wing. Now they're losing their funding. The State Board of Elections decided to not follow HAVA, to not follow federal voter registration laws, and now they've lost control of the state board. I mean, like, when do you wake up and realize this is not sustainable going forward for our political party? At what point do you wake up and say, we are going to continue to have this happen to us time and time again, whether it's a state issue or a federal issue? It's just going to continue to happen. But for whatever reason, Democrats just can't really seem to wake up to that reality, and then these situations continue to happen. I'm grateful for the Department of Justice. I'm grateful for Harmeet Dhillon, and I'm grateful for the new Board of Elections that, at least from the one statement we got from the executive director, looks forward to working with the Department of Justice and getting their voter rolls figured out so that these situations don't exist in the future. You know, Democrats were so beside themselves and so frustrated over Jefferson Griffin challenging those votes, the 60-plus thousand votes that he challenged. Hopefully that never happens again. And with these voter rolls being cleaned up, which hopefully will happen as a result of this lawsuit, it will never be able to happen again because there won't be votes to challenge. There won't be ballots that can sit out there that a candidate, whether it's a Democrat or a Republican, can say, I've got a problem with these ballots and here's why. This was a key portion of Jefferson Griffin's legal challenge was in fact HAVA. The other part of it was the State Board of Elections ignoring voter ID as it related to overseas voters. They just decided, oh, well, it's too much of a barrier, so we're not going to do it. In violation of state law, they opened the door for these challenges. For Jefferson Griffin, he was unsuccessful in court, essentially, because a judge says, I can't go back and change the votes 6 months later. That was one of the final decisions as it related to that legal challenge and argument. I hope that never happens again. I don't like that that situation had to unfold. I'm glad that it did, because it shined a major light on what are huge problems within the North Carolina State Board of Elections. So we'll watch this U.S. Justice Department lawsuit play out. We'll watch continued changes as it relates to the State Board of Elections and see what they have to say in the future as it relates to their voter rolls and getting some of those cleaned up. As I mentioned to you yesterday morning, should be an interesting day for the WMPO here across southeastern North Carolina. They'll be discussing a potential toll bridge. Details on that coming up tomorrow. Once again, thanks to the Law Group here in Wilmington for their continued support of the program. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. We're back with you tomorrow morning right here on the Nick Craig Show.